On the show today, we've got Dr. Claudia Collins, who works as a senior medical officer and lead clinician at Yuliburubar on Majurubar, Stradbroke Island. Having grown up in far north Queensland, Claudia shares how her journey with med school and her work as a doctor sparked her passion with Indigenous and rural health. Claudia shares some of the simple but powerful teachings from community elders. It was a privilege to speak with Claudia today, and I'm so grateful for the work she does.
Indigenous Health Med Talk with Dr. Danielle Arabina. Yarning with innovators, trailblazers and community leaders in Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander health and medicine. Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander listeners are advised that this podcast may contain the voices of persons now deceased. This podcast is a General Practice Training Queensland initiative supported by Australian General Practice Training and the Australian Government.
And welcome to the show today, everybody. We've got the lovely Dr. Claudia Collins, who's joining us via Zoom. Welcome to the show, Claudia.
Hi, Danielle. Really great to be here. Thank you.
So, Claudia, I met you very briefly over at Yuli, one of my very favourite AMSs over at Stradbroke Island. So I love the work you were doing, and I saw your passion as a non-Indigenous doctor. So I thought I'd get you onto the show to talk about your story and tell me where it started.
So I'm originally from beautiful far north Queensland. I grew up around Tully on Djerbal country. I have always lived rurally, have always, you know, connected to the smaller town vibes and the lifestyle that you can have in a small country town. I think everybody knows everybody, and that's a really beautiful thing. Everybody connects with everyone, and I think that love of connection kind of then naturally progressed to wanting to do work with people in some kind of space. And I guess medicine really spoke to me. I sort of didn't really have another plan of what to do all the way through school. Medicine was kind of the thing that stood out to me as something I think I felt strongly about. I knew I wanted to work with people. I knew I wanted to understand more about people and their story and what I guess makes them tick. And I think that natural kind of inquisitive sort of side of things really kind of spoke to me, that you can explore all aspects of a person's being in medicine. So I didn't really have another plan B if medicine didn't work out, if I, you know, made the application and it didn't happen for me. So thankfully I got into James Cook University. So, you know, rural medical school, a regional medical school. And those guys have a really great curriculum. They've got a really strong emphasis on kind of rural, remote, Indigenous and tropical health. So I got a really great foundation in the medicine that I kind of understood as a layperson before I went to medical school, then going into, I guess, the inner realms of medicine and really understanding, well, why is healthcare like that? And why are rural communities like that? And how do I fit into that picture? And how can I enhance things? How can I make things better? How can I influence and improve outcomes for people living in those kind of places, like the ones that I grew up in? So I guess JCU was really great for me in that it fostered this kind of extension of my kind of inquisitive nature and really fostered that kind of strong sense of passion for rural medicine and gave a really good foundation and strong mentors in those realms of healthcare that they're so passionate about, that rural, remote, Indigenous and tropical medicine. So I had a fantastic time at university. I loved every minute of it and did some, you know, amazing placements in incredible rural parts of the world. I was up in Cape York for placements. I went out to Mount Isa numerous times and was in far western Queensland. I was really afforded every opportunity to really kind of decide if that sort of rural space was for me. And for me, I couldn't see any other way of doing medicine. I couldn't understand why you would want to come and work in a giant city hospital full of thousands of people and, you know, and maybe, you know, see and understand people for 3 seconds and then that was it. And I couldn't understand how medicine would work like that when you can build such a relationship with people understand where they come from, what makes them tick, and be able to influence their journey to better health in such a way by building a good relationship with someone. I sort of didn't understand how medicine worked in like 3-minute allotments. I couldn't get my head around that. So I had no desire to come to the city where I thought that was how medicine worked. So James kind of enhanced that for me entirely.
Because we have trouble getting doctors into rural spaces, I love hearing the passion in your voice and understanding that you are sort of integrating in part of a community as a sort of a community-based doctor. And what I love in Indigenous health myself is that you have the ability, you're not just treating the patient that's sitting in front of you, but you can treat the whole family in a way by even changing the health outcomes from the person in front of you, or providing health literacy or education. They can go back and change, take that information to their family and share it with their family.
Exactly. And I think that the interest that I had in medicine as a whole, and what really drove me into medicine, is understanding people and understanding their story, is kind of what led me to my work and discovering my passion within the Indigenous health space. I sort of found my niche in medicine, I guess. I was like, this is where we can truly understand someone's story, and understanding a person as a whole and building a relationship with someone makes sense and makes a difference. And understanding a person's journey and walking with them on that journey to better health is something that I didn't get in any other aspect of medicine. And so I think that's what I had been searching for a really long time in medicine, to try and find where was that place that I felt most comfortable and where I could practice the medicine that spoke to me the most. And understanding people's stories and being able to have the time to be able to listen to people, understand where they come from, understand their fears and concerns and their passions and their interests, and then use all of those things to be able to get better outcomes for people. By extension, again, it's a beautiful thing, like you said, that kind of sense of community and sense of understanding a person as a whole. And that extends to not just that single person that's in front of you, but then their family and community as a whole. When you have one person in front of you, you don't just have one person, you have extension, you've got their family. And then by that extension, where that family sits in community, and being able to have a small part to play in each of those aspects of someone's life and someone's health journey, I think is such a privilege. And it's a really special thing to be a part of. And I think that's the part of Indigenous health that I really, really love. I love understanding people's stories. I love understanding where people come from. I love being able to have the time to have a yarn and really get to know my patients so that I can understand how I fit into their picture and how I fit into their journey towards better health.
And I absolutely agree. I think it's having that space in a consult room where you can actually explore different notions for it to really treat a person holistically. So asking about what is your home environment like? What's your spiritual connection? How have you connected to culture? Because we know that through research that understanding the connection to culture is really important for health outcomes. So I think it's the beauty that you can be afforded in Indigenous health, that you're offered the space to sit with somebody, whether they come through a clinic and they, talk with the health workers first or the nurses or something like that. So, Claudia, I understand through your training, that you went out to Longreach and you've been, as you said before, to Mount Isa. How were those different experiences? Did you find that Indigenous communities were different in those places?
Someone once said, when you've seen one Indigenous community, you've seen one Indigenous community. And I think that's very true. I think the sense of community and the sense of connection, I think, is really strong no matter where you go and whatever community you're working within. But I think there's huge differences between rural and remote communities versus even, you know, I work in an urban Indigenous setting now. There's huge differences in terms of access. If we're really thinking in kind of Western terms, I think there's huge disparities in access. There's huge disparities in access to education, to healthcare, to really simple stuff that we wouldn't even think twice about. You know, access to what food is in your supermarket. Simple stuff like that. And the tyranny of distance is never more, I think, obvious when you're in remote communities and you want the best possible outcomes for people. You want the best possible access to healthcare. You want everybody to have a gold standard of healthcare. But that distance to that gold standard of healthcare is sometimes so immeasurable that it's really, really hard to justify the sense that people don't get what they should in a country like Australia, that people don't get that gold standard of healthcare that we, you know, assume is available to everyone. That distance thing is actually real and true. And we live in a tiny island, but we live in a vast expanse of country. And I think that's still really felt, particularly in rural and remote communities, and particularly in rural and remote Indigenous communities. And I think that was kind of never more stark for me than I did a placement in Cape York and had a patient who, you know, needed dialysis. You know, for example, the nearest dialysis at the time was in Cairns, which is like, you know, a 4-hour flight away on a tiny plane. And, you know, you had to get umpteen ticks of approval to get travel and accommodation down in Cairns to be able to start dialysis. But what do you do after that? You start dialysis, you're stuck. You can't stop dialysis and just decide, well, I've had enough in Cairns. I don't want to be here anymore. I'd like to go home for a visit. I'd like to go home and see family. I need a break. I need some time out. Well, what are you going to do? Like, you don't have access to dialysis at home. You are stuck in a place that's unfamiliar to you on your own with no family and no support mechanisms. And you're sent down there for the best standard of care, but to the detriment of your kind of holistic being and your self-care and your spiritual care. You know, that gold standard of healthcare, it theoretically looks great because, oh, yep, we've sent somebody off to get their dialysis and they should have dialysis because that's what we do for people when they, you know, reach a certain stage of, you know, chronic renal disease and renal failure. But at what expense? And I think those kind of bylines of healthcare are the things that maybe we don't necessarily always think about as well. It's that, well, what happens to that person, not what happens to that condition, what happens to that person? And I think that's never more strongly felt than in rural and remote communities, and particularly in Indigenous communities where there's such a close connection to family, there's such a close thing to country that, you know, even me as a non-Indigenous person can palpably feel when you're working within community and with people who have that strong connection. It's really hard to justify that's the gold standard of healthcare when it's affecting so strongly every other aspect of that person's being.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, you talked about the expense and, you know, to put it in a sort of slightly different, it's the word cost. So we talk about fiscal cost and ticking the box and all of that sort of stuff. I remember my father went into rehab after he had his leg amputation and he had to have, you know, knee replacements and blah, 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 blah. And he was in rehab, but he had a window that was near that looked out at the water. And so for him, he wanted to stay there. Like, that was because he had that view of the water as an island man. Like, that reminded him of home. It's the mental health that deteriorates a lot when you're disconnected from country and you're disconnected from your family. And, you know, even the costs of, like, how do you get food for yourself? Like, who's looking after you? So it's such a complex arena. And for yourself, Claudia, as a non-Indigenous doctor, what were the challenges for you when you entered into Indigenous health? Because, you know, I get a lot of, we, you know, first year registrars that we try to say, look, it's very complex medicine. It's multifaceted. It's not just a simple, I've stubbed my toe. I've stubbed my toe because, you know, I've got 20 people living in my house.
No, it's not simple at all. I think people completely underestimate the, if you're going to call it a challenge, the challenge of working within the Indigenous health space. Sure, people are like, oh, yep, you get lots of, you know, chronic disease and I'm here for the chronic disease and I'm here for the, you know, presentations that you don't find anywhere else and I'm here for this and I'm here for that. But you don't hear the, like, I'm here for understanding the whole complexity of the patient and how does that complex chronic disease or that complex medical condition affect that person and then affect every aspect of their life. It's like, sure, you can throw a bunch of medications at someone and you can read a bunch of textbooks and know what the textbook answer for management of this chronic condition might be. But that's not going to work if you don't take that person as a whole and understand, again, it goes back to understanding a person and a person's story, understanding where that person actually comes from, what their story is, and all the other influences in their life and on their life to be able to get them to where they are now and to understand where not only you want them as a doctor to be from a medical wellness perspective, but what actually that wellness looks like to them in their context, and then being able to find and understand that and then walk with them on that journey towards that target. I think we're really focused on medicalizing things and the disease aspect of a person. And I think Indigenous health is wonderful in that it makes us think beyond that. And being immersed within the Indigenous health sector and working within an Aboriginal medical service with a community and for a community, I think you really get a proper sense and a proper understanding of it. You're not just treating a condition, you're actually working with a person who is part of a family, who is part of a community to exact that change. That change might not look like what you expect from a Western medical viewpoint space, where your goalposts might be for the end result of treating that condition. It might look completely different to that person and what they want out of their health and how they want to feel and how they want to be able to interact with their family and their community. So I think we get a really good sense of that from working within the AMS setting, because we're immersed in community, because we're working for a community, because we work so closely with Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people in our everyday space to be able to get the best for our patients and the best holistic care for our patients. And understand exactly what that looks like. And I think you don't necessarily get that anywhere else in medicine.
It's such a beautiful space. Sometimes it's heartbreaking. Sometimes, you know, I've left the room and gone and had a little cry in the staff room or in the toilet or wherever is safe. Sometimes you carry that pain home. It's tricky, I think, when you're an Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander doctor and you're sitting there and you're listening to stories that are just like yours at home. And it's that reflective back to you. It's an absolute honour to be able to work with community. And I love that, you know, it even seems from the story you've just shared with us that you, you know, grew up in Tully and had this beautiful sense of the whole understanding the whole of the person and the storytelling. So when you did start in AMSs, quite often our registrars might have access to cultural mentors. If you were exposed to cultural mentors, what were some of the advice they gave you? And perhaps did it challenge any of the preconceived notions that you had?
I was really, really lucky in my registrar space. When I moved into full-time AMS work as a registrar, I was really blessed to have some amazing cultural mentors, both, I guess, formalized as part of my kind of training process and as part of the way that the AMS I was working for wanted to provide support for a registrar. And so I guess I was really, really lucky in that sense. I had wonderful cultural mentors who were both elders in the community as well as emerging leaders. And so I was afforded the understanding of what had come before, but also allowed to gain a perspective from the next generation coming through and leading community. And that was a really special insight that I was able to have. I think my cultural mentors were wonderful in that they worked within the AMS space. So I had cultural mentors at work every day, but I was also connected to community elders as well that weren't necessarily directly related to my everyday work in the clinic. And I think that was really important as well, because I gained a sense of actually, let's not talk about medicine and how to treat a person or how to interact with a person. Let's talk about country. Let's talk about community. Let's talk about our First Nations people's journey in this space. I want you to understand what the things that are important to us are in our area. I want to connect you to this uncle. I want to connect you to that uncle. I want you to hear a story from this auntie, and I want you to kind of come and sit with me for a while and just be. And I think that was a really special thing that I was being given in that space. So not only my cultural clinical mentors, but community mentorship, which was really powerful. And I was really, really blessed to be taken in and accepted like that. I think that was a real privilege for me. I think I wouldn't have got that anywhere else.
How did that change you, sitting down next to the uncle on country, just being?
I think it taught me to really listen, and not just listen as in listen to what was being said. I think it helped you to listen to what wasn't being said as well. It helped you to listen to what you were feeling and what you were seeing with your eyes, but also what you were seeing with your mind. So it really was understanding just a tiny, tiny part of what a spiritual connection might feel like, or what a close connection, you know, of the spirit and the heart and the soul might feel like. That was probably one of the most important things that I was taught. And it was really resonating through my mentorship in clinical and non-clinical space, was to listen, and to listen with your whole being and not just listen to words, listen to everything that was going around, even if it was the silence. Listen to the silence, because you can just gain so much by listening. And I was taught in the what seems like the simplest way, but it was the most beautiful and most special and gentle way of teaching someone that I think I could possibly ever imagine. And I think that was really pivotal.
And I think that what you were sharing was so beautiful. And I talk a lot to the registers about that. I say, listen to what's not being said, or what's being said in the spaces between the words. You use the term listening with your whole body. And it's interesting, because in medicine, we're taught this is the symptom, this is how we fix it. We either cut it out, we give it a tablet, or we do something like that. Back in the day, we were healers, people in this sort of space where we are now. And healers did have that connection to a sense of something other than us, and being able to use our intuition or to receive a feeling from somebody. And so it sounds like that's what the uncles and the aunties were really teaching you, was to be able to open your energy field up in a way and perceive, not just with your eyes, but feel it in your heart, or feel it in a particular part of your body.
And not just think about it from my brain power Western medicine background, is to actually just ignore that for a minute and just be something, and listen, and just open yourself to that person and their story.
I remember the orthopedic, the little cartoon video, and it was this person with there's a bone, I need to fix it. And like, they're dead. Oh, but there's a bone, it's broken, there's a fracture, I need to fix it. And that's what I think, we get really caught up in that mentality of seeing something, having to fix it. I remember talking, having a yarn with another doctor, and they were saying the health journey for someone mightn't go along the path we expect it to. They were almost refusing treatment because they accepted that that's the way the ancestors wanted things to be. You know, a loss of a limb or cataracts on the eyes might stop them from doing ceremony. And so that's why it was important for them to get it fixed, and why they might have been a delayed presentation. It mightn't be that straight linear path that is non sort of Indigenous medicine, but more of a winding track that we walk along beside our client. It's a journey.
It's that whole journey.
Now, speaking of journeys, Claudia, we still haven't gotten how a rural lass who's been hanging around up in FNQ, far north Queensland, how you ended up in Brisbane in this space.
I made the move to Brisbane because I wanted to, number one, I wanted to try something No, I didn't really want to try something different. I was trying to find exactly the same thing that I was doing before that I really loved and was passionate about, but that translated to an area that was acceptable to my now husband, who said, enough with the rural jaunts and the remote locations. You need to make a decision and settle down. And so that led me to go, how can I still practice the medicine that I love and that I'm passionate about and be around the people that are passionate about the same things that I am and the patients that make my heart sing every day, but still live in the southeast corner. And I was like, well, I'm working within the Indigenous health sector. Surely that this remote and rural work translates still to the Indigenous sector, but in an urban setting, because I just couldn't see myself doing kind of 9 to 5, 7 minute medicine in some suburban general practice for the rest of my life. I think I wouldn't be able to survive. I just would not be able to cope. And so I was dreading that I was going to have to give up everything that I loved about medicine to compromise, to fit a box. Well, why can't I continue to work in Indigenous health? Why can't I continue to be around the people that spark my passion? And so I talked to some people who I knew, because I guess medicine in Queensland is small. Rural medicine is even smaller. The Indigenous health sector is even smaller again. So everybody knows everybody, or at least they know the name of somebody. And I was lucky enough to score an interview and then a gig working down here in the southeast corner for Moreton Aches. So part of the IUE, the Institute for Urban Indigenous Health's network of clinics. I scored a gig and started working at Caboolture and Deception Bay as part of the team over there, and then made my way across to Yulaburi Bar, which looks after Minjeri Bar, so North Stradbroke Island, and the Capalaba Wynnum kind of Bayside region. I came over as a senior GP and then took on the role of senior medical officer. And I've been with Yuli now for nearly 4 years. And I guess I've found my people. I found my community. And yeah, I get to be a part of this kind of like beautiful space of medicine. I get to practice the medicine that I love, but I get to listen to people's stories every day. And that's what makes my heart sing. And, you know, the boat ride over to Minjeri Bar is pretty good too. That's a nice aside, you know.
It is quite stunning.
Start and end my day with a boat ride.
Yes, it is absolutely. I have contemplated how I could work. I live way too far to head down there. But I was sitting there going, it would be so, like, it's such a beautiful place. It's a great AMS. And to be able to, like, as you said, going out on that boat in the morning and in
it's
the evening.
It's just a fantastic way to kind of like clear your headspace.
Exactly.
Your day, but it's also a really great wind down at the end of the day to collect your thoughts and relax and then go on with your kind of home life.
And that's the beauty, I think, of working in AMSs is that you have all of the different allied health team there. So what's Yuli got?
So Yuli's fantastic in that we work as part of a team. So your GPs are, you know, just one cog in hopefully a really well-oiled machine that delivers amazing holistic care and gold standard care to patients. So we look at what the essential things that everybody needs from healthcare. And sure, they need GPs and they need medicine, but you also need all of the wraparound services that help keep a person holistically well. So we have Aboriginal health workers and practitioners. We have nursing staff. We have visiting allied health. So our patients can come in and see the GP and we go, oh, hey, actually, we do need to do a podiatry check. How about we book you in with our podiatrist? She's here tomorrow. We can get you an appointment. That's not a problem. We have dental on site, which is really wonderful. We have dental at Capalaba and we have dental at Stradbroke Island too. So we have dentists who are almost full time. So any day of the week, you come in with a toothache and we can sort that out as well. It's just, you know, GPs trying to do the best they can to try and then get you into, you know, the public dental system, which is just crazy. We also have a really incredible social health team and family well-being team. And I think that really speaks to the unique unique Indigenous health sphere in that we look at not just how medically well you are, but how well your social health is, how well your mental health is, how well your family health is. And so we've got this amazing team of social health gurus who work with us, who are counselors, psychologists, social workers who are available to us all the time. And we have an amazing family well-being service. And those guys include family support workers, in-house intervention workers, as well as looking after the birthing in our community space. So we work in conjunction with the BIOC midwives who come out of the Redland Hospital, who help look after our women, keep them on country, and be able to allow people the space to have the pregnancy care and then delivery that they really want by being able to stay close to home and involve family and network from their local familiar clinic. We work with an amazing bunch of people.
That's the thing that I love about the AMS space. I saw it with Yuli as well. The programs that are developed are responsive to the community needs. Yuli have the little surf school for kids during holidays, but they also run the 715 health checks. That's a thing that you need to have done before you can come onto surf school. So there's just like all these little beautiful community incentives. Kabul up at Toowoomba can't offer surf school, but they offer their own sort of thing. So that's what I love about AMS is they work with the community and they're responsive to the needs to the community rather than this sort of overarching, like, you've got a sore knee, I have to fix it, or
you know. Will have what we tell you to have. And that's all you get, sort of. Whereas, you know, it's really amazing to be able to work for a community that helps us as doctors understand what the community wants from us and the way that they would like services delivered and the way that they would like to interact with the health service. And that's a really amazing way to work and to really understand what a community wants from you and what a community needs from you is a really powerful thing. And it just allows us to do the best work possible.
And I think it's quite humbling for doctors to actually have to sit there and go, well, hang on, what I think my needs are not as important as all of these other things. It's being part of a team and your word isn't God. Like, you know, we're moving away a lot from that doctor is God, and as doctor is part of this amazing team that really cares about the whole health of a person. Thank you so much for your passion and the work you're doing in this space. I'm watching you on Zoom and your face is just lighting up, like you're beaming when you're talking about this work.
I'm really blessed and lucky to be able to be allowed to work within this space and to have been so welcomed into this space. I think that's a really huge deal.
What do you recommend for any health workers that may be listening who want to get into the Indigenous space? What, do you have any advice?
If you think that Indigenous health is something that you would like to understand more about, then I think you cannot go wrong with actually working truly within the sector and working for an Aboriginal medical service. That is probably one of the most supported positions that you could be in to be able to learn more about Indigenous health, to be able to learn more about First Nations people and their interactions with our healthcare system, and to be able to start your own education and your own journey towards understanding how you fit into making that a better space. An AMS job, an Aboriginal Medical Service job, a community-controlled health organisation role is an amazing way to be able to experience this in a truly supported space. So I would absolutely encourage any healthcare worker out there who is considering or interested in an Indigenous health role or wants to understand more about the community that they already live in or a community that, you know, they are interested in and they might not know very much about, make contact, talk to people within that space and apply for those jobs. Absolutely. They're so supported, and the people who work in AMS settings, and I can vouch for this because I'm one of those people, are truly passionate and who really want to be there. So the fact that you have made that decision and wanted to come and be a part of us is really exciting for us, and we want to make sure that you do have a good time, but that you also go away with a great understanding and a deeper appreciation for First Nations people Indigenous health as a whole and what that interaction actually looks like. And we want you to understand the community that you work for, because you actually are working for a community. You're not just doing medicine somewhere in an office and dealing with one person at a time.
A fantastic answer. Now, the second part of that question is, what would be your sort of top tip for somebody? Have you got any go-to resources that you love, books that have changed your life, podcasts, apart from this one, of course, anything that our listeners who might necessarily be in medicine but really interested in learning more about the space?
If you're after a really specific textbook, Binan Gunj is a really great resource. It gives a really great initial understanding to the interactions and challenges faced by First Nations people interacting with a Western healthcare system. So I think that's probably a really great resource. And it's one that I recommend to all of my general practice registrars that come through as well. And then my next bit of advice would be start talking to people, because there's some amazing local resources in the areas that you're working in, and some really incredible Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander leaders and elders that have created beautiful texts and beautiful language books and resources that are actually really great for you to just be able to understand the community that you live in and that you are working for. So there's some amazing, amazing books that have been written by some of the aunties on Minjeribah that are bush medicine of North Pacific Island that, I just find incredibly fascinating and helps me to really understand then and contextualize the community that I'm working in and the people that I'm working for, and how also I think to think outside the box in terms of what Western medicine works and looks like versus what our community might view as medicine as well, and being able to incorporate those things into your everyday practice. So I think looking at local resources is really fantastic too.
Thank you so much for your passion, your light. I'm saying light because you're just beaming on camera when I'm looking at you, and the dedication that you have to First Nations people, our mob, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people. It means a lot to me. You know, my father lived, you know, had a lot of rural experiences, I suspect, when his health was deteriorating. And I only wish that he had a doctor like you that was able to look after him. So thank you so much, love, for the work you do in this space. And it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the show.
It's a true privilege every day to be able to go to work and look after community. So I'm thankful and grateful every day that I get the opportunity. Thanks for having me.
No worries. So we're going to pop your bio in the show notes. So if anyone's keen on working in Indigenous health at Yuli or anywhere in the southeast corner, are they able to send you a little line, drop an email?
Absolutely. I'm more than happy to have a chat with anybody. I'm more than happy to get an email or two. You fire away, and I'm happy to be able to facilitate anything that we can do to help expand people's understanding and knowledge of the Indigenous health space.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for your time today, love.
Thank you so much, Danielle.
Thanks for listening to Indigenous Health Med Talk with Dr. Danielle Arabina. Please subscribe to the podcast and check out our YouTube channel, Indigenous Health Med Talk. This podcast is a General Practice Training Queensland initiative, supported by Australian General Practice Training and the Australian Government.